Now live from Everbank Field, 1010 XL 92.5 FM presents Jaguars Today with your host Mike Dempsey and Jeff Lagerman.
All right, they could use some more Hail Marys, some Our Fathers, some whatever other go-to prayers you might have right now. 0-6. Loggy says you got to look past the scoreboard sometimes. Not easy for every fan to look past the scoreboard.
No. I get that. I mean, it's you want to see confirmation. You know, I think is a good way to put it. Which in this league, the only way that you get confirmation is getting wins, and I get that part of it. But you know, I don't know if there's ever been a team in the National Football League that has been as bold or as crazy, however you want to term it, to start and play this many rookies on one side of the ball, and to still be able to have an opportunity for the last 2 weeks. I mean, my glass is half full, and my glass is half full because the Jaguars have a quarterback. I mean, I'm talking the Jaguars have a quarterback, a big time quarterback. Now, look, I don't know if he's going to be Peyton Manning or Tom Brady-esque, but when you watch him and you just sit there and you see some of the things that he does, you don't see very many that have ever been able to do that. His awareness is fantastic. His competitiveness is fantastic. And his results are very, very good. And for a young player to be able to be the best player on a football team, which he is right now. He's their best player right now. To be the best player on a football team and to be carrying this football team and to make as little mistakes that he is making, that's tremendous.
I don't doubt anything you're saying there for a second. My question, as you say all that, why was this not more evident in the process leading up to the draft? Why weren't these characteristics of Blake's brought out more? Why weren't they spotted more? I'm glad they weren't. I'm not knocking the pick. Clearly, it looks like a fantastic home run of a selection. But why was it when he came off the board? Huh? Really? I'm not sure about that. I mean, why wasn't there more consensus that this guy had every tool you could possibly want to get the job done?
Lack of a track record. You know, guy that comes out as a junior. You know, scouts are always very nervous about the quarterback position and juniors that come out. And I think that the more, for example, if Andrew Luck came out when he was a junior, I think that there would have been a little bit of skepticism among some, even still coming out as a junior, just because he came out as a junior. But Blake Bortles even more so, because it's not like he was playing for as long as Andrew Luck did.
But Luck actually did come out as a junior. He could have come out as a redshirt sophomore.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly. But he had more of a track record than Blake Bortles. I mean, Blake Bortles had an okay season, and then he had a very good season. He was at a program that many viewed that wasn't as big as a big-time program like a Stanford. Andrew Luck has a dad that played pro football.
I understand why Luck was
more confident
regarded
in that
way.
But, you know, when you watch the two of them, the awareness and the presence of those two are very similar. Very similar. And if you went back and you looked at Andrew Luck's rookie year, and I haven't done this yet, but I want to do that, I would bet you that the completion percentage is higher with Blake Bortles. And maybe Tony can pull that up.
I bet you're right. I mean, well, first of all, when he come out of the gate with 78% in his first start.
But here's the thing. I mean, Andrew Luck had, you know, a pretty decent offense around him and some weapons around him. Whereas, you know, Blake Bortles has a cast of rookies, you know, and an offensive line that's still trying to feel its way, you know, and a defense that didn't do anything, you know, in the first game that he started in, and then started to come around. The only thing that I wish, and I remember in the Detroit game in the preseason when I changed my mind, and I said, I think they ought to play him. Because when he came in and he was cold off the bench and did that 2-minute warning at Detroit on the road, and, you know, he almost threw an interception, don't get me wrong, but he drove them down the field and gave them an opportunity at scoring there at the end of the half. That's when I changed my mind. And when you watch him play today, it's almost as if the last 2 weeks is what you wanted to see the first 2 weeks of the season. You know, to where, okay, now the season has started now that Blake Bortles is the quarterback. Okay, if the first two games the Jaguars came out of the blocks and played like they did against Pittsburgh and then played like they did against Tennessee, what would you feel like about this football team at that point? You'd feel pretty good, wouldn't you?
You'd feel better, and you don't know if you would have been able to do it, you know, different levels of competition, all those kind of things.
Yeah, but you would have felt better, I think, about this football team.
If the results were the same.
Even if it was a loss and a loss, okay? Loss and loss with this football team, or even loss, loss, loss against San Diego, Pittsburgh, and the Tennessee Titans with Blake Bortles at the helm, to where Blake Bortles went toe for toe with Phillip Rivers on the road, came back and played the Pittsburgh Steelers, had an opportunity to win, and then against Tennessee had an opportunity to win at the very end of the game, you would have been like, all right, you know, this team is not bad.
I don't think anybody is looking at Blake and saying, man, he's the problem. Yeah, he's made some mistakes. He's thrown some interceptions, and that's going to have to come with the territory. But I do think the legitimate question is, you talk about all these rookies that they're playing.
Mm-hmm.
Are they all going to turn out to be what they expect them to be, right? I mean, they're putting a lot of time in developing all these guys. And if they all do get better at the same time, well, you could have something really,
really
special, right?
Yeah.
But in that, I mean, there's a lot of questions still that are unanswered about these guys. Wide receivers not seemingly running very open in the secondary, right? You know, whether that's because they're young, because they don't have the speed, whatever the case may be, any combination of things.
Sure.
A lot of receivers, we talked about this yesterday, a lot of receivers start slow and year three hit their stride. You know, well, that's several years down the road. And for Jaguar fans right now, you don't know if that's going to happen because a lot of guys start slow and stay slow. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but these guys haven't started slow, the wide receiving core.
Marquise Lee?
Well, Marquise Lee has just because of injury. But let me pull up some statistics for you here on these young wide receivers, okay? And this is, okay, Allen Robinson leads the entire league in receptions without a drop, 30.
That's pretty good.
Okay? He's also tied with Sammy Watkins for second among rookies with receiving yards per game. Sammy Watkins, okay, a guy that the Buffalo Bills mortgaged the future
right
for. Okay, at 51.8 yards per game. Kelvin Benjamin, obviously, is just fantastic. He's got 69 yards a game.
He's scoring
Carolina
touchdowns.
Carolina Panthers, absolutely. Hearns is sixth among rookies, an undrafted guy, at 49.7 yards per game. And Lee is 13th at 33. Hearns also leads all rookies in yards per catch. So if you compare it to the rest of that apples to apples, you know, other rookie wide receivers, they're doing pretty good.
But we play in the NFL here, right? Big boy football. And ultimately, if you're a Jag fan, I understand the point of view that bottom line is that's great. We're 0-6. We're not scoring any points. And all this is hope for the future. And there are guys who started out bright as rookies and not, you know, panned out. We don't know what we have great hopes for Allen Robinson, for instance. We just don't know exactly what his ceiling's going to be, where he's going to end up a few years from now. Right now, Jeff, he had six teams in the league this week that allowed 16 points or fewer. Five of them won their game. The Jags, the only one that didn't, because they're not putting points on the scoreboard. Now, whether that's a combination this week, field position was certainly a big factor in
sure.
it. They moved the ball, but critical mistakes, mm-hmm. Red zone ineffectiveness, all these different things are combining, to keep them off the scoreboard. Do you see enough signs that you feel like that has a chance to get turned around quickly because they need it to?
Well, I don't think that it's going to turn around quickly and all of a sudden they're going to start reeling off wins. But I think this is a process with a young group that is going to look really good at times, and then some weeks it's not going to look so good. I mean, that's just the inconsistencies of young players. That happens. You know, and here's the thing. If other teams, and it's hard to draw a comparison with other teams around the National Football League because the Jaguars are unique in a couple different ways. First of all, they're starting a lot of young players, and they've committed clearly to the future. And I think first of all, it takes a lot of guts to be able to do that. It takes a lot of patience by an owner to do that.
How much patience?
And it takes a lot of patience by a head coach. I mean, here,
right.
You got a head coach here that would love to have, you know, the situation that Mike Pettine has, you know, in Cleveland, for example, to where you've got a pretty talented roster that's not so young. That steps into it and then, you know, starts saying, hey, we need to put wins together. You know, so I give them credit for having the courage to do it and to be able to withstand some of the noise because the noise is loud now. I mean, I get it. I get it because it's a bottom line business.
If outside of Blake Bortles, you know what? I'm going to save this talk because we got 2 hours to get into this and we're coming up on a break. Tony, you find those numbers on Luck
yeah.
v. Bortles?
Luck, if you go back to his rookie year, which I assume is the comparison you yeah. wanted to make, Jeff, if you look at his first four games, 51, 64, 47, and 56% completion percentage. Mm-hmm. Bortles, at this point, has never been below 58. I actually, if you look at his rookie year for Andrew Luck, 12 of his 16 starts that year were below that 58% mark. He wound up 54% on the year.
What was the TD to interception ratio his first year? Just out of curiosity.
He was 23 to 18, touchdown to interception.
23 to 18. Now, he did have Reggie Wayne,
yeah,
and they drafted T.Y. Hilton.
And he was 7 to 5 in those first four starts.
7 touchdowns, 5 interceptions.
Yeah.
Okay.
What is Blake right now in terms of 4 and 7?
4 and 7.
Four and 7.
And then he also had Dwight Freeney and Robert Mathis on the defensive side of the ball.
Correct.
If I remember right.
In terms of overall winning, right. And winning.
As far as, you know, field position, right, getting takeaways. I mean, those two guys were still playing at a high level.
Hold that thought. We got 2 hours to get into it, and we will welcome your phone calls here today as well at 641-1010. Jeff Logman has put his eyeballs on the film, and we will look back at week 6 and where things are headed in week 7. Today, the Tom Bush Family Dealerships Fan Feedback Spotlight asking you, Jaguar fans, what's been the biggest single culprit? Well, an individual, a unit, what have you. What do you point to the 0-6 start? And, you know, not to just accentuate the negative, but I think most people would point to one guy wearing number 5 as the biggest positive. I think that was an easy one.
No
so
question.
Let's look at the other side, and we'll do that with number 56. At Logs56 on Twitter, L-O-G-S 56 at MD_1010XL for myself, at 1010XL Fat Tony, at 1010XL Lauren for Lauren Brooks. Just getting rolling. It's Jaguars Today. Mike Dempsey, Jeff Logman, Fat Tony here with you on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
Come.
All right, the Loving Spoonful.
Talk of all the things we did today.
Darlin' Be Home Soon. Care to wager a guess, anyone?
They're coming back home.
Is that it, Lauren? Back home?
Exactly it. You got to win at home.
For 2 weeks.
This song, by the way, was recommended by Joe Fortunato last week, and I've been saving it all week. So I don't know if there's meaning behind it, but I made it my music theme.
Well, there's a lot of meaning, I'm sure, for Joe from back in his old days.
What occurred to this song back in the day?
I don't want to know.
Activities. Well, I don't know. It could be just he could have painted the house. It could have been a number of things that happened back in the day.
I'm thinking pizza.
Pizza and house painting and maybe some PBS.
And pizza.
Yeah.
PBS.
And pizza.
What about PBR?
And probably plenty of PBR.
Jeff had his Riders on the Storm moment last week.
Right.
That's right. Love it.
We watched him go to a different place in his mind.
Right. And so that's when Joe suggested this song. So I assumed there was some meeting going on.
We got a lot of ways to go here. I got a lot of people on the line already for you. So let me ask you a couple of quick things. The interception that Blake threw, they're already in field goal range. Or, you know, Scobie can easily, 29-yard line, talking about a 47-yard field goal attempt for Josh Scobie. That's comfortable range for him. Give me your thoughts.
Well, it's just it's a timing route. The ball has to be gone before Allen Hurns is actually turned around. And Allen Hurns, while he's in the process of coming back to the ball, has like 3 stumbling steps and falls down. You know, so I don't put that one on Blake. I mean, that's a timing throw. At worst, that should have been an incompletion if Allen Hurns is able to keep his feet.
And because we, until today, Tony may have already looked at that play. He's got the All-22 over there on NFL.com. But it's on the TV angle. By the time you see Bleedy Ray Wilson pick that, Hurns is laying on the ground. He's like 3 yards behind the play. You know what I mean? And so it appears that he fell down at that moment. You're saying he took a few steps. That
it was like 3 stumbling steps, and then he goes
down. Does he need new cleats or what?
I don't know. You know, I know that in Carolina, with all that rain that they had, you know, the days prior to the game,
right,
they didn't cut the grass. It was high. Look, and I'm not trying to make an excuse for Allen Hurns because, I mean, Bleedy Ray Wilson kept his feet fine in a reactionary role, you know. But Allen Hurns got to keep his feet in that scenario. Much like on the long ball here against Pittsburgh, in which Allen Robinson had a one-on-one situation going down the sideline on a go route, you know, when that ball was intercepted. If you don't make that play, at worst, that has to be an incompletion. Your wide receiver has to play defensive back at that point. You know, so to me, I don't have any problem whatsoever with those throws at all.
Clay Harbor even said on the one that looked like a bad overthrow by Blake, where Harbor was kind of stumbling, but it appeared, again, on TV, it's tough to tell. It appeared like he was stumbling because the ball was kind of out of his reach. He said he started stumbling, and if he hadn't and he was able to keep his feet, he would have been able to run right under that pass and run out of bounds at the 10-yard line.
No, I disagree with him on
you
that.
You do? Okay. Was he trying to protect his QB?
Yeah, that was just a bad throw.
Okay. So he is capable of making a bad throw.
Yeah,
is the,
yeah, but you know what? Play. Out of all the throws that he had, I think he probably had two.
That's pretty good.
Two of them that weren't great.
Yeah, you even raved talking here off the air about the touchdown to Clay Harbor. See, I understand. Well, you said it was a great throw because he protected him from the initial contact, didn't let the first guy get a clean shot.
Well, there was a situation where you had, you know, Clay Harbor was a tight end on the right side, and so you had, once the coverage begins and Clay Harbor is in that seam route, you have a linebacker to the inside, a linebacker outside of Clay Harbor, and then you have a safety over the top. And when Blake throws that ball to protect his wide receiver, he actually throws it to the back shoulder side of Clay Harbor. And because Clay has to slow down and turn his body, that actually protects Clay Harbor from that first initial hit. And it also actually made the safety, who was coming up for a bone-crushing hit, actually miss. And so the throw, to me, was magical. I mean, right in the backside of the spot, he protects his wide receiver, and then his wide receiver, because of that momentum turning to catch the ball, is able to keep his feet going. But I give Clay Harbor a lot of credit. I mean, there's a lot of wide receivers or tight ends in that situation that when they caught that, they would have went down to the ground and not been able to keep
the
balance.
And that's why I thought that the play was a dangerous play, because as we sat here and they get first down at the 15-yard line, I believe it was, and, you know, Tony's first words were, you stick three in the end zone. I totally agree with him, because the last thing you want to do is get tackled at the 5-yard line or anywhere in that scenario, because you need two scores still at that point in time. So I thought it was a dangerous play. Hey, look, sometimes
it would have been dangerous if he threw it to Clay Harbor in stride on that seam route, because then Clay Harbor might have been inactive this week because he was in a concussion.
And I'm
program.
Not even talking about physically dangerous. I'm talking about dangerous to the context of, you got three guys, three defenders around that play. If one of them is able to bring him
and
down.
And here's the other thing.
If he
had thrown it on time, or hit Clay Harbor in stride, the linebacker would have had the ability to make a play on it.
Right.
Now, possibly an interception.
Last thought, and then we'll go to these phone calls, and I'm sure they want to ask some similar questions, some of them anyway. What's going on with the running game once again?
Offensive line took a step back this week in Tennessee against, I don't want to say they're worse than the Pittsburgh Steelers, because the Pittsburgh Steelers are just, they're not that good on defense as they once were. But this was a step back. Brandon Linder, who has been their best offensive lineman, you know, week in and week out, I mean, preseason, regular season, had a tough game. Derek Morgan got him. Jarrell Casey got him. Rapati Patoa-Tua got him. He struggled. Sammy Hill got him.
What about Jokel?
I think he actually, and me and Baselli kind of had a little bit of discussion.
Yeah, he thought
this.
It was his best game.
No,
perhaps.
No, I don't think so. I disagreed with that. I think it was his best game as far as technique goes. In the first weeks of the season, Luke Jokel, and I study an offensive lineman kind of from the other side of the ball. You know, okay, and I'm looking at him. I'm going, okay, how can I get him? How can I beat him? What is his weakness? In the first 4 weeks of the season, Luke Jokel got a lot of weight out over his toes. And for an offensive lineman, you knock the hands down and you can get around them, because it's kind of a all or nothing kind of thing with them when they get the weight that far on their toes. And that's why Joe Thomas, Michael Roos has been so good for so long. It's why John Ogden was so good, because he was so big, so strong, so long, their weight never got, and the guys I'm talking about, they're currently playing right now, their weight never gets over their toes. Well, Luke was trying to get more physical by being more weight forward. And when he did that at times, he was missing guys. He was getting beat quickly. Well, you're seeing him now be soft but not getting beat clean. So to me, that's progress as far as technique goes, but the production is still not quite there because he was soft and he was giving up pressure, but he's not giving up hits on the quarterback. So if I had to grade him, did he get better? His technique got better. His production did not get better.
All right. There you go. Jeff Loggeman here with us. The number is always 641-1010. Let's go to the phones and welcome Clint to Jaguars Today. Good morning, Clint. How are you?
Pretty good, Mike. Nice to talk to you guys. Jeff, I'm so glad y'all went. I'm glad y'all went to the topic about the offensive line, because I was tweeting with our good friend at Jags Voice, Brian Sexton, during the game, and I kept saying this is the point where the offensive line needs to step up and take charge of the game, and it just wasn't happening. Now, Jeff, over the years, I've heard both you and Tony Baselli talk about how linemen, whether it be offensive or defensive line, you guys play with a lot of pride and effort because you're the heart and soul of what makes each side of the ball successful. It all starts down there in the trenches. and I look at the way our offensive line's performing, and it's like they're playing with their heads stuck between their knees, trying not to barf on themselves, because they're just beat play after play after play. And I was talking to Brian during the game, and it was like it was really discouraging. I wanted to get off the bus because there was nothing going on the offensive line.
Yeah, I agree. I agree because, you know, the offensive line, you know, they clearly took steps each week. And then this week against Tennessee, they did not take a step forward. You know, and the Tennessee Titans going into that game play 3-4. And with a 3-4 defense, the strength should always be the outside linebackers. Cameron Wimbley and Derek Morgan are not the strength of the Tennessee Titans. Between them, in fact, every linebacker on the Tennessee Titans defense did not have a sack going into that game. All the sacks came from, you know, the down guys or the defensive backs in a blitz situation. So I thought it was a great matchup and a great opportunity for the Jaguars to establish the running game and give Blake a clean pocket. And it didn't happen. And that was probably the most disappointing thing to me, is that they weren't able to get the running game going and that they gave up six sacks. But at the same time, I'm okay with if they gave up three sacks against that football team just because of the score and the way that that game kind of went. And then there were a couple of them that were on Blake Bortles. But to me, I agree. I mean, that was very disappointing that they did not take a step up against a defense that is not that good, in my opinion.
Would you give Storm Johnson another start this week if it were you making the call?
Sure. Because the difference in the holes that Storm had to run against with his opportunities against Pittsburgh compared to that to Tennessee, very different. And so to me, I'm just going to kind of be a grab bag kind of a coach if I'm coaching the running backs as far as who's going to get play time until I can find out who's got a hot hand.
How did he do, by the way? I don't know how many circumstances he is on the field in, you know, maybe not obvious passing downs, but did he do okay protecting Blake when called upon?
I don't think they asked him to do a lot in protection, and that's why you saw Clay Harbor staying in a little bit, and you heard Gus Bradley talk about in his press conference yesterday that he'd like to see Clay Harbor get a little bit better in pass protection. So I think they asked him to do more of that than anything, you know. So there will be a time where he's got to start to be able to do that, and we haven't really seen him have to do that, but that time is coming.
All right, let's go back to the phones. David, you're next up on Jaguars Today with Jeff Loggeman. Go ahead, man.
Hey, guys, how you doing? I haven't really been listening too much this morning because I just get sick and tired of the negativity. I'm a glass-half-full type guy, and I just see this team getting better and better each week. I mean, I know we have room for growth and all that, but, I mean, you know, we're a blocked field goal away from a win, and, you know, we've got six starting rookies and youngest team in the league, so I see nothing but upside for this team. But what I wanted to talk to you about was I don't understand all the money we have cap-wise and not spending it. I mean, I can think of two guys. I understand about not getting old people because they're, you know, they're on their downside or whatever. But I can think of two guys who are productive every single place they go. And one of them is a Jacksonville boy, Leon Washington. Leon Washington would be a great fit for this team, and Steve Smith would have been the other one. But, I mean, I don't understand holding on to this cap money. Can you explain that to me, please?
Yeah, it's a great question. And
the GM just, as he was asking that, Dave Colwell poked his head in the door, and I was yelled at him, Dave, what about the cap space? He did. He just walked by and waved below.
Now, and me and you were actually talking during the break, in that I don't know if there's ever been a team in National Football League history that has ever committed to growth with youth like this football team has. And now next year is a different world. And I said it to you, I think, last week or the week before, that they have to spend money. And they will spend money. But I think as part of the growth process, what they wanted to do is to try to commit to a young group of guys to see if they can develop. Because, you know, here's the thing. With this football team, and if you compare them to other teams in the National Football League, they have the fewest pre-2013 draft picks on this roster as of last week. They have five. Can you name them?
Mercedes
five
Lewis,
draft picks.
Pre-2013, Cecil Shorts, Mercedes Lewis. Let's see. I'm got to go through the mental Rolodex here. Tony, help me out.
You're three
here.
Out of five.
Anger.
Anger, yes, four. Scobie.
And Scobie, five. Those are the five draft picks on this football team that have been drafted by this team prior to 2013.
Yeah.
Lowest number in the National Football
League. I get you. They're turning, but let me ask you this then. All right, they're committed to the youth and to rebuilding it, and that's going to take time. I'm a fan out there, and I'm saying, all right, I'll give you some time. I gave you 4-12 mm-hmm. when we had the worst first half maybe of anyone in history. I'm here at 0-6.
Maybe? No, there's no maybe okay. to that, by
all
the
right.
way.
I'm trying to give them a little latitude. I'm here at 0-6 for the second year in a row, fourth time in NFL history uh-huh. that's happened, and you know, not necessarily a ton of ones you can point to and say, yeah, we're going to get that one coming up. All right, but whatever. All right. What is the expectation? Wins and losses to a fan like that says, okay, I'm going to be patient to a degree. But at a certain point, I need to see this bear fruit. Mm-hmm. And we can't be told it's a 3- and 4-year build every time we see other teams turn around a lot faster in the National Football League. Is there a number next year that they, in your estimation, have to put on the board in terms of wins and losses?
Is there a number? Otherwise, things change?
I don't know. Well, what's fair to hold the general manager and the head coach and the coaching staff, what level of accomplishment? Not mm-hmm. hope, but accomplishment now. 3 years in. Mm-hmm. What's fair in your mind?
As far as wins and losses?
Yes.
I think in year three, you gotta be looking at seven, eight wins. You know, and then in year four, they expect to compete for the playoffs. And I'm talking BA playoffs.
Haven't we heard, though, that it was 2015 is the year they expect to compete for the playoffs? I mean, wasn't that kind of the narrative last year?
I don't know. I don't remember exactly what they were saying as far as timeline on that. But, I mean, in my mind, I see this team next year looking at, you know, because my prediction this year was somewhere in that 6-7, you know, win range, somewhere in there.
Me too.
You know,
6-10.
And then next year I was thinking, okay, 8, somewhere around 8. And then in the year after that, playoffs. And I think that's a realistic fan expectation.
Do you think Shad Khan will be with that? If they go 7-9 last year, because you said 7 or 8 wins. Let's say they go 3-13 this season. Okay, mm-hmm. that was very possible. And they go 7-9 last year. Shad Khan going to be okay with that? As long as
I don't know.
I'm asking
that.
Your opinion. No, I know you can't read.
Will he
mind.
Be okay if they go 7 wins next year?
Yes.
Yeah, I think so. As long it depends on how you get to those 7 wins. You know, are you competitive in games week in and week out? Or are you giving up, you know, 40-point games or 30-point games, you know, throughout, you know, the season? I think it all depends on what it looks like at 7-9.
All right. 6-4-1-10-10. I'm trying to ask
I need to
questions.
Add a little water to your glass, Mike.
No, I'm trying to ask questions that I hear people asking. Because I can sit here, Jeff, I can be as patient as I can be, right? But it's the guys that have bled teal.
Now, wait a minute. You're presenting this as if I don't bleed teal.
No.
But people in this building are bleeding teal.
I get you. And
look, I've got to be able to do games, you know, about this football team. Trust me. I mean, I want to see it too.
I hear you. But I'm trying to reflect what I hear from fans.
Sure.
They email, they tweet, they whatever, and they say, look, I'm tired of this.
So am I.
That's why I'm asking
But here's the thing that why I still will say my glass is half full. Okay. It's about the quarterback in this league.
I got that.
And it looks like you got one. Okay. So now that you have one and he is how many games in? 3 games in, okay?
But it's about more than that, right? Matt Ryan's a pretty damn good quarterback. He's got Julio Jones and Roddy White.
I never was a believer in Matt Ryan.
Well,
never.
I mean, all right, tell me who you believe in, because I think we could. There are circumstances. You look at Atlanta, when they had the offensive line, hey, they're winning a bunch of games. They're slinging it around.
They've never had a very good offensive line.
Well, they're terrible right now.
They've never had a very good offensive line.
Then why were they able to win 12 games? I mean, what was it about that team that was able to win 12 games?
They had a good defense. They had a quarterback that was playing pretty well, and they've always had outstanding wide receivers.
I think their defense
outstanding high level.
And they still have them.
Their defense has been very...
No, I'm not talking about the defense. The receivers are still there.
Right.
They're not putting up points.
They don't have an offensive line.
That's my point, though, that you can have this great quarterback.
Their offensive line has taken a step back from the early years, and then they hit a window to where the offensive line was terrible. Now the offensive line in Atlanta is better, but still not good enough. And Matt Ryan has not gotten better. Show me 1 year in numbers that you can tell me that Matt Ryan has gotten better in his career.
In numbers, I don't know. I have to look it up, and I'll do that.
Or just say even the eye test.
No, I look, I tend to agree with you, but most people would put Matt Ryan in the category of like a top 12 quarterback in the National Football
League. No freaking way.
All right. Well, that's your opinion on that. But I think a lot of people would look at that and say there were some pretty damn productive years with that offense in Atlanta, that they were on the brink of.
Look at his weapons.
I understand that.
Some of the best weapons in the National Football League.
My point is, like you said, the offensive line is different this year. Just because you have the quarterback, if there enough of the other circumstances aren't there.
It's a different type of quarterback. Matt Ryan doesn't make an offensive line better. He's never done that. He's never done that. Peyton Manning, Ben Roethlisberger make offensive lines better because of their ability with pocket presence and to extend the play. That's not Matt Ryan.
Got a break. We'll come back. More Jaguars today. Mike Dempsey, Jeff Loggeman, Fat Tony on 1010XL 92.5 FM. All right, folks, a photo of your student's lunch could give them the chance to meet the Jacksonville Jaguars. Post on Twitter or Instagram and tag at Jags Promotions or visit jaguars.com/lunch to enter by October 17th. That's a few days away. Sponsored by Fresh for Florida Kids. So check that out. Coming up again, tag at Jags Promotions or visit jags.com/lunch to enter a photo of your student's lunch. How about that? Remember those rectangular pizzas? That was the best day when they had that.
Yeah.
That was lunch that day. You know? Used to spend 10 cents. Our lunches used to cost 10 cents when I was a kid in elementary school.
I was a corn dog guy, and I was
maybe
doubles,
the milk was
doubles every week.
The double corn dogs?
No, double lunch. Didn't matter what
lunch.
It was.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, doubles. You know, you had the big plastic trays with all the different, you know, compartments.
Absolutely.
In it. You know, you go through
give
the
me two
line,
of everything.
I double it up.
Yeah?
Every day.
Would they give you two of everything?
Absolutely.
You have to pay double for that?
Yeah.
Or did you intimidate them?
You had to pay double.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Did you say, hey, do you know who I am? I'm Jeff Loggeman, big-time baseball player. Because that's what you were.
No, I had an older brother at that time that intimidated a lot of people, so that always helped.
Did you know whose brother I am? What were we doing? We were going far afield right before the break, talking about the offensive line, all that stuff. Let's let folks get in and ask some of their specific questions here. I think we beat that into the ground pretty good, the whole Matt Ryan discussion. All right, moving on. 641-1010. Motes, you're on next on Jaguars Today with Jeff Loggeman. Go ahead, please.
Hey, guys. How you doing, man?
What's up?
Listen to the show every day. I got a comment first and then a question. My comment is I'm really upset with the whole Eugene Monroe trade right about now, telling me you couldn't use a veteran presence on that offensive line. Just kind of ticks me off a little bit, first of all. Secondly, I got a question. If our rookies don't develop the way they're supposed to develop, I think Bortles is a great player, but the receivers kind of have some question marks. If they don't develop and we're staring 0-6 in the face again, are we firing Coach Bradley? What's going to happen as far as that goes? So that's my question for you guys.
I don't think there's any thought of firing Gus Bradley. I don't. I mean,
I would agree with that within the walls of this building and this organization, but that is starting to come up. That's just an indication of how frustrated I think some fans
no,
are.
I totally understand fans being frustrated, but when you commit to rookies, as many as they have on offense, you have committed to growth and you've committed to where there are going to be times where it is not good at all. And now the last 2 weeks, I have a hard time saying that it was not good, that it was bad. To me, I don't have a problem with the last 2 weeks. You're competitive in both games playing a gross amount of rookies on your football team. I don't have a problem with that.
What about the Eugene Monroe decision? How good a player in your mind was Eugene, and did he fit what they wanted to do here as well? Because people have said, look, you know, if Jokel right now is just average, and I understand you and Buscelli continue to say he's got all the tools, and I don't doubt you, all right? You can judge that a lot better than I can. I've said for years I can't really judge offensive line play. other than when I see them give up a bunch of sacks or you can't run the ball, but I can't break down the specifics. Would they have been better off keeping Eugene Monroe? And now, obviously, they would have had to re-sign him to a big deal because that's what he got on the open market.
I think that would have been worse than the running game with Eugene Monroe.
Worse.
Yeah.
Is that possible?
Yeah.
Put me out there, I guess it'd be possible.
Yeah. But, yeah, it's possible. Trust me, it's possible. Eugene Monroe was not a very good run blocker. He was an average offensive tackle. And I don't know if there was a personality conflict or what it was, but, you know, when you draft a guy as high as they did, Luke Jokel, you commit to him, and you commit for him to play left tackle.
I got you, but I think
Luke
his
Jokel,
point would be,
let me add this real quick, though.
Should they have kept Monroe and not drafted him at all?
No. Luke Jokel is a very good run blocker. I'm talking a very good run blocker right now. It's his pass protection that still needs help, but his run blocking is exceptional. He run blocks as good as Joe Thomas. He run blocks better than Michael Orr.
Then why can't they load up that horse and ride right behind him?
Well, you got to have a guy next to him playing a little bit
okay.
better.
Okay. Well,
Zane Beatles has got to be better.
So, and that's why I'm asking you.
Tight end's got to be better.
People are asking these questions, right? You know, what is it? So you're saying if you had a guy playing as well in that regard at left guard and tight end, if you had Mercedes Lewis, for instance, and you could line him up over there, you'd have a shot.
Yes.
All right. There you go.
Now, if the caller had brought up Darryl Smith, you know, why did they get rid of Darryl Smith?
Right. We beat that one in the ground.
Totally agree with
you. We beat that one in the ground too much. I feel almost ashamed to bring that up again. A daily basis almost.
But again, that is committing to down the road. I mean, that's the mindset that they had when they walked in here.
I got you. But, you know, if you're a fan, you're like, that's all that's wonderful. Then call me when you're good.
But
you can't
run a team as from the mindset of a fan.
I understand, but wouldn't it be a benefit to this team to have a veteran out there who can make a few plays? And wouldn't it help even if you had Darryl Smith on the field, just to use him as the example, and he makes some plays that in turn might be the difference in some of these close losses and that confidence level. All of a sudden you start winning, you start breeding that, you know, that confidence, that mindset, sprinkling. I know they've tried, and Tony's pointed this out. Look, they have done it in the secondary. Guy like Alan Ball, you know, but he was a guy, Darryl Smith, who was a proven performer in this organization. That's why I think that one stands out like a sore thumb.
I agree.
And so, like I said, I don't want to beat that into the ground. We've made the point on that I don't know how many times. Let's go to James up next here with Jeff Logman. Hi, James. How are you? Hi, James. All right. Let's go to Jimmy up next here on 10th NXL. Hi, Jimmy.
Hey, this is Jimmy. I'm at and I shake my head, and I listen to the analogy of you analysts, with all due respect, of saying every week we're getting better. That is not true. We haven't beaten this point spread, and when we play
teams
that have the
same record. What's the point spread got to do with getting better?
Well, I'm trying to make an analogy also.
Okay, well, don't use that analogy because it has no application when you want to evaluate a team whether they're getting better or not.
All right, pardon me. I won't use that. But when I hear every week they're getting better, they get better when they play teams also that are about that have won one game or two games when they play Oakland or they play the Titans. I mean, these teams are pretty much even. Now, next week we come in with Cleveland. I guarantee you, Cleveland has improved immensely this season, and you'll find that out. And plus, we haven't even gone into the heavy part when we start playing the big boys. I mean, they got to show, understand about all the rookies and so forth, but experience. If we had players that were experienced, I guarantee you Jeff Logman could get up from that desk now, don a uniform, and get his buddies Freeze and get McManus and get Jimmy. They would put on a better game than what we are showing right now today.
Now that's crazy. No, but I understand what you're saying is if we were in our prime, we would have helped.
I don't think that's what he's saying.
We are well past our prime.
I think you say
prime.
You could get up from this table right now.
No chance.
Is what he's saying.
I have a hard time getting down to a three-point stance.
Hopefully
now.
That's hyperbole. But, you know, again, you know, what was the line on this game, by the way? Anyway, do you remember?
I'm pretty sure they won the line.
I would think they had a bigger at home.
I doubt it was a one-point game.
I'm guessing. I can't recall what it was. Yeah, something like that. So you're even wrong on that point. Even though it's not applicable, you're still wrong on that point. Look, I'm not. They are getting better in certain areas. Mm-hmm. Blake Bortles is clearly taking steps every week, I think. Mm-hmm. The defense has gotten better mm-hmm. over the last couple of weeks, but there are areas the running game has not gotten better. I mean, there are just certain areas that have not, and there are some guys that are not playing very well. And, you know, some of these guys get replaced. We've seen it happen already. Mm-hmm.
Now here's some areas that you know, and I'll go down the line on offense. Okay. Allen Robinson has gotten better. Okay. Still performing well, still raw, but Allen is performing at a better than expected level for a rookie wide receiver, especially he did not have any training camp or offseason. So when I look at him, I'm going, all right, there's a guy that's impressing me. Luke Jokel has been a little disappointing. Now, do I still see signs that he has talent, that he's going to be good? Absolutely. Zane Beatles, disappointing. Luke Bianco, I thought, had a very good game against Tennessee.